This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire for Wednesday, November 3rd. Wow. Do we have a great podcast today? A lot of stuff happening. A lot to get to. I've got to start off by giving a major shout out to the Atlanta Braves on the World Series crown. Congratulations, Braves. Never been a huge fan of the Braves. I will rattle for you some of the names of my favorite Atlanta Braves of all time. I have a lot of their baseball cards, especially rookie cards, because I was a kid of the 80s who grew up collecting baseball cards. Dale Murphy, certainly one of my favorite Braves. I definitely love the swing of David Justice. I love the swing of Fred McGriff, the crime dog. For some reason, I loved Ron Gant. I don't know if any of the younger fans even know who Ron Gant is. And I'll close out. I know some people are like, what about Glavin and Smoltz? Yeah, you got to love those guys. But Greg Maddux had the filthiest stuff, I thought, of all of them. And I was a big baseball card collector with my brother. We were so nerdy that we would save our allowance money, go to this baseball card store. We'd get our parents to take us there with our friends, of course. And we would just buy cards and packs and buy boxes. And then we would have, in the summer, we would like, you know, it was different. You didn't have the internet, social media. You would see your friends and be like, yo, we're selling baseball cards in my basement. You got to come over and buy some. And then we'd have them come over and they'd buy our baseball cards. And I actually remember a couple times me and my brother got tables at baseball card shows. It was hosted at like the local high school gymnasium on like a Saturday or something. And you would, you know, spend $50 and then you could set up a table and you would have all your cards and the hard plastics and you would sell them. And it was pretty awesome. Baseball cards were amazing back then. I haven't bought cards in forever. My kid got into Pokemon a little bit, but that ship has sailed, thankfully. Anyways, congrats to the Braves. Well done on winning the World Series. First crown since 1995. In slightly darker news, I don't even know what to make of Henry Ruggs, the situation with the Raiders. Gets behind the wheel, lubricated heavily at like 3 a.m. and crashes into the back of another vehicle. That car catches fire. The person in that car dies. Police show up. Henry Ruggs charged with 2 felony counts, DUI and like, I guess, murder. You know, I don't even know what to say. I was going to talk about fantasy football and Henry Ruggs and try to make light of it, but geez. I mean, Henry Ruggs just flushed and, you know, promising NFL career down the drain. He's going to be going to jail, probably, right? Killed somebody. You know, who's getting, I don't even want to get in. I'm not going to moralize on this. Henry Ruggs is something insanely stupid. A lot of people have driven behind the wheel drunk before, and, man. You got to feel for the guy's family. You got to feel for Henry Ruggs, his whatever family he's got. You got to figure for the Raiders. What the hell's going on? We're having a great season. Our coach gets fired for old emails, and our fastest wide receiver, a former first round pick, is going to jail. Like what? And oh yeah, the Raiders travel to the New York Giants this weekend. They are 3-point favorites. It's just a crazy story. I don't really want to get into it. What I do want to get into is our guest. He's awesome. One of my favorite college football announcers. You hear him every weekend if you watch college football. His name is Tim Brando. Very, very opinionated. And what I love about Tim, a lot of these announcers are very by the book and vanilla, and they don't want to offer strong opinion because they don't want to be polarizing. They want to play it down the middle. Tim Brando is a veteran. He says, screw all that. I'm going to say whatever I think. And I love that. I respect that. And now we talked on Tuesday before the college football playoff came out. And it was as if he had his ear to the door, was listening through a glass, and knew exactly what was going to happen because he predicted basically everything to perfection. It's a little bit sad because before we get to Tim, I just want to say, you guys know this if you are friends with me or we communicate on social media or you knew me back in the day. I have always, always been a champion of the underdog and the little guy. Because I consider myself an underdog, and I've been, you know, fighting those uphill battles my entire life. And I know there some of these are first world battles, but nevertheless, I've considered myself an underdog. I was undersized as a youth athlete, and I was going to push my way in and fight and try my best, and I'm not going to get pushed around. And then I get out of college, and you know, you're looking for jobs and it's like, well, you didn't go to this journalism school. It's Florida. I got into the University of Florida. I got into the University of Syracuse, but I didn't want to go to those, which had great journalism schools, because I'm like, yeah, that's far away. It's cold as hell in Syracuse. It's going to snow. A bit of a mommy's boy. At any rate, I didn't want to go down to Florida, although, and I think I've told some of you, I might have told this story on the Saturday show. My dad and I drive down to the University of Gainesville to tour the campus after I got in. And, you know, it's amazing down there. Of course, Gainesville is incredible. And, you know, we go to the tour and there's, 20 families. And the tour guide comes up and it's this, I mean, it had to be like a Vegas 9. Just absolute smoke show is the tour guide. And, you know, I'm just like, wow, unbelievable. This is, and then you're walking around the campus and it's just like, this is life in Gainesville. And I was really close to going there, but I ultimately did not. And it, you know, in the long run, did it hurt my journalism career? Probably. I probably could have got ahead more if I had gone to a really well-known journalism school. But ultimately, as an underdog, underdogs have to do this. They got to fight their way in the back door. So what did I do? I left the newspaper. I went to a magazine. And from the magazine, I started a website. And, you know, the website, I was challenging the gatekeepers of newspapers who had long held, this is how it's going to be. This is what sports should be. We will tell you the story. I said, no, I'm going to tell the real story. I'm going to give real opinions. This is BS. This is garbage. I fought against them, sold the website, made a decent amount of money, parlayed that to TV. And again, it's like you get to TV and it's like, well, I'll never forget. I'm sitting on the stage. You know, we're about to go live and I'm looking around. It's like Chris Carter, a Hall of Famer who's been on every network. He had been at ESPN. He had been at CBS and now he was at Fox. And I'm like, you know, Chris Carter and I disagree on something. And ultimately, and I don't know if I ever in the moment got better reaction from producers, but like I basically went at it with Chris Carter in a calm, collected manner over Dak Prescott. And he just kept, you know, going at me with, well, when I played and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, well, the numbers say something else. And, you know, historically and blah, blah, blah. And it was like one of those moments where like, I'm the underdog and I'm not going to back down because I know I'm probably right. I can back up my argument. And as an underdog, you're going to have to fight for everything you want. And, you know, I've been doing that all my life and I'm going to fight for the underdog here in college football in the Cincinnati Bearcats. And they got shafted again as these jokers in the college football committee continue to move the goalposts seemingly every year. Hey, guys, you got to play people. You got to win those non-conference games. Cincinnati says, okay, we'll go win at Notre Dame. We'll go win at Indiana. And of course, Indiana was really good last year, 6-2, finished top 15 in the country. They're good this year. They're not great, but they're good. Cincinnati has those wins. They said, okay, we have the wins you asked. We went on the road, and they are rewarded with number 6 in the college football playoff, which is a joke. I would ask the committee. I'm sure the empty suits asking the committee these questions will not do it, but who has Alabama beat? You know, that Alabama win over Miami, that's your non-conference win? I mean, Cincinnati has a way better win over Notre Dame on the road. By the way, Ohio State stepped out of conference and lost to Oregon. Oklahoma, they are behind Cincinnati, but their schedule is tough coming up. I'm rooting for chaos, folks. Unequivocally, I am rooting for Oregon to lose again. They probably will. Ohio State might lose again. Oklahoma may lose twice. We get all into this with Tim Brando. I just want to lay it out for you real quick. And Alabama could lose to Georgia. If you've got 4 2-loss teams, there is zero chance Cincinnati's missing the playoff. There's just no way around it. Anyways, I've prattled on long enough. Without further ado, let's get to the great college football announcer. I mean, he's called everything, but I like him as college football, Tim Brando.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't,
he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guy you know if you've watched sports. Geez, over the last, 30 years, he's announced everything. He's a legend. Tim Brando. Tim, how are you?
Thank you for going with 30. It's almost 40. So thank you for that.
Wow. You're part of the
40 years ago.
I don't. I was, maybe in the womb about 40 years ago. But I know you were like part of the soundtrack of my youth, college football, in like the late 80s, early 90s. It was awesome just listening to you. And now to get you on the podcast. And listen, there is a lot happening in college football, a lot happening in the place you grew up, Louisiana, LSU, a coaching search.
Right.
We'll dive into all that. I don't know. Tim, I'll get you started. Listen, right now it's November. We don't know who are the Heisman finalists are going to be. We don't know who's going to be in the playoff. We're recording this before the playoff show. I'm all in on Cincinnati, but I'll give you the table. Where would you like to start? I mean, USC has a coaching opening. UCLA may have a coaching opening here on the horizon. A lot happening in your sport.
Let me start with what we can, from an evergreen standpoint, tell you, even though the dog and pony show of Tuesday night at the time of our taping had not happened yet. It's so very predictable. Number one, God bless Reese Davis for asking all the right questions. Of course, the spokespersons always give the canned responses that mean absolutely nothing. But that's what that job is, and he has to do it. Look, there are key phrases out there that we need to remember. All right. Number one, eye test is code for we don't care. We're exclusive. The hell with the teams that we don't know that much about. So they're not getting in. Okay. That's what eye test means. Glass ceiling. Glass ceiling is code for, hey, Cincinnati, you got in the first one, but you're not going to get in the next one. That's what glass ceiling is. Okay. And then strength of schedule. All right. SOS is, here's another way with the use of bogus metrics provided by the College Football Playoff Committee itself from its dog and pony show offices just outside the Metroplex of Dallas, Texas, that's already giving the information to the reporters that are covering the sport for their network partnership to say, well, if they go undefeated, they will have the worst strength of schedule in the history of the college football playoff. So let's undermine Cincinnati one more time just to make sure people understand that we're not really screwing them when we are in fact screwing them.
Massively.
That's what all of that means. It is one big show. And the entire Who's In PR campaign is the worst PR campaign in the history of organized sports. What did it do? Who's In took the conversation of college football, second most popular sport in America. It took that and just whittled it down from 130 Division I schools to, you know, we're a bunch of lazy asses in media. We don't want to talk about more than four or five teams. That's really all we want to talk about. We don't want to bother with teams that might be on the outskirts of the top four. We don't want to do that. So Who's In has basically kept 126 teams out. That's what it does.
Yeah.
And it allows the media, guys such as yourself and Colin and God knows how many other people, to say, why should we bother with talking about college football on a regular basis? We already know who's in.
Yeah.
We already know who's in. So as a media, college football's punditry doesn't know how to cover the sport. It only knows how to cover what they're accustomed to covering, the same damn teams. So I'll start with that.
It stinks. It's kind of, you know, this happens in the NFL too. It's basically, hey, everybody loves when you talk about the Cowboys. So talk more about the Cowboys. Yeah. People love Aaron Rodgers. People love Tom Brady. Just focus on them. Don't talk about the Bengals. Nobody cares. Right. You know, it's like, don't talk about Michigan State. Yeah. I mean, but Tim, I don't know how, if a lot of people buy into this FPI from ESPN, Football Power Index, which is, I don't even understand it, but I'm going to come clean with you, Tim. Right now, the number six team in FPI is the Pitt Panthers. Number seven is the Cincinnati Bearcats. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
I mean, the Pitt Panthers, they have zero chance at the playoff. None.
After Michigan State beat Michigan, they actually published an FPI that said Michigan had a better percentage opportunity of being in the CFP than Michigan State.
Unbelievable. So there really is no telling what's going to happen, except that Cincinnati's probably going to get screwed.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. This is a tough one, though, Tim. Is there a scenario, trying to be honest, where Cincinnati gets in? If Georgia beats Alabama and Alabama has two losses, are they still putting in a two-loss Alabama over a undefeated Cincinnati?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, that would be bad. That would be awful.
It's going to take multiple two-loss teams. It'll take more. In other words, we need to see chaotic destruction, okay, the likes of which really we haven't seen since 2007. Mm. You know, when the BCS had to vault LSU from number 7 to number 2 when Shady McCoy did West Virginia with Pat White and those guys, when Bonstadt pulled it off. And then we also had some other upsets that were not predicted, and LSU went from number 7 to number 2 after the SEC title win against Tennessee. It will take that. It'll take multiple two-loss teams. Mm-hmm. It could happen. It could. Listen, I certainly hope I'm wrong. I hope Cincinnati is in. I predicted them to be in the college football playoff at the start of the year.
Nice.
Partly because I want to screw the system. And
I want
all the elitists to be pissed off. And then the other part of it was I felt that the only way that you're going to knock out an additional SEC or Big Ten team, which costs them money,
you
force the hand of those that run the sport to say, we got to expand. Now, expansion is already there. It's going to happen, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it's going to happen is the players here, the commissioners of the conferences outside the SEC, they've all determined that we have to expand. You know, Pac-12's in, the whole alliance thing, all right? The alliance that was formed basically because of the way the SEC poached Oklahoma and Texas away from the Big 12, there's no specificity to that alliance. There's no contract with it. Yeah. There are no firm dates about when teams are going to play one another. That whole thing is about telling the SEC, you may be the big dog, but you're not going to run the whole show. We're going to see to it that you don't run the whole show. So we're going to go to 12, but we're not going to go to 12, Jason, until realignment is completed. That's going to take another couple of years.
Yeah.
And they're also telling the CFP as a group, they're telling them, you're going to have more than one network covering college football in its postseason or, you know, in the next deal. And you can either tear up the contract you currently have, or we'll let this baby run out and then we'll put it up for bid and it'll be in the billions. And the only way we can get billions is going to be with two networks.
Two networks, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about Oklahoma, Tim. I like to joke that they are called Choklahoma. They always lose one big game a year. They do have two ranked opponents left on the schedule at Baylor, at Oklahoma State. The game against Iowa State's no layup. First of all, is Oklahoma good? And second, is someone from the Big 12 potentially going to get shafted from the playoff?
They have the best players. You know, they have the most 4- and 5-star players in the Big 12, without a doubt. But as a team, they're not better than Oklahoma State right now. Oklahoma State's the best team in that league. They're playing at a higher level. Their defense is tremendous. In fact, they are winning with their defense, which you would have never said that about an Oklahoma State defense in the past. They were known more for their firepower, their spread, all the things that they were basically Oklahoma light. Okay. They were getting it done with lesser talent, with a developmental program. Okay. With 3 stars, not 5 stars. But defensively, they've got a lot of super seniors back from COVID. They got a lot of 5-year guys too, and they're playing at a high level. Oklahoma doesn't have the run game that they had a year ago with Ramondre Stevenson. Okay. And that's what hurt Rattler. Rattler wasn't horrible. He just had no run game to help open up the passing game. Now, Caleb Williams helped give them what? A running game. That's what he did. Rattler couldn't run the way this freshman can. And he's, he's gone from the bench to a Heisman front runner.
Yeah.
And he dethroned the preseason Heisman front runner. So they got a lot of talent. The offense is can be devastating, no question. But their defense remains porous. Alex Grinch is still struggling to get his guys lined up. A Kansas team that was just thrown to the wolves in Stillwater. 55 was hung on him by Oklahoma State, and it was 55-3. Kansas should have beaten Oklahoma at home the week before. And I will tell you, it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't like Oklahoma played any worse than they had played before. They just weren't very good at stopping Kansas. Yeah. Well, you know, Kansas should be easier to stop, and Oklahoma couldn't stop them. So they're always in danger because of that. And I'm going to tell you, Baylor is, in my opinion, right behind Oklahoma State in terms of its defense and an offense that's coming on. Keep an eye out for them. I think Baylor will have something to say.
Interesting.
Before they play, that's the game I've got on Saturday, is Baylor at TCU. And TCU, of course, is without a coach. And that coach was just let go after 21 years. One of the great names of the last two decades is gone, and Gary Patterson. But I think Baylor is a formidable foe for Oklahoma the week after that.
Let me ask you, you've announced games for a long time, multiple decades. Have you ever seen anything like the Spencer Rattler situation? A guy who's so good, Heisman front runner, NIL money, although that's new, potential NFL, and then for him to be essentially benched for a guy, a freshman, who is lighting the world up. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No, not that I can recall. There may be an example or two. I mean, even as great as Tim Tebow was, as a freshman quarterback, remember that first national championship, he was sharing time with Leaf. I mean, he came in there and Urban couldn't even start him. You know, he came in, he was sort of the third down wildcat package guy, you know.
Red zone guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was, that's the only thing that comes close to compare it to, really, that I can think of. Tim had a similar reputation as a highly recruited top tier guy that everybody wanted, similar to Caleb Williams. But no, I mean, he at no point was he a threat to take over as the starting quarterback of that Florida team. And as you know, they went on to win the national championship his freshman year.
If Spencer Rattler's dad came up to you and said, "Hey Tim, we're really struggling with this. Any advice? You've seen a lot of this. You've seen the college football. Like, you know, what do we do? NFL? Do we stick it out as a backup? Be backup again next year? Do we try? What do we do, Tim?"
Well, listen, I'm the last person you probably should ask as it relates to what the best business decision would be.
Yeah.
All right. But it's never been better. It's never been easier for a guy in that position, Jason. The transfer portal is like, it's nirvana. I mean, it really is. I think the Dr. Pepper commercial on the transfer portal is maybe the best sports commercial of the fall season.
That's a good one.
Yeah, Boz should win an award for that one. Not all of them are that good. That one's really, really good. I think that another year in college would be good for him because it would make him worth a lot more, in my view, than – but who knows? If you talk to some of the guys out there that are involved with combines, if they say he's going to go top five, just go. You know, just go ahead.
Is that even possible, though?
I don't see it. I mean, I don't, but there are times when, you know, the NFL gurus that seemingly know more, or at least think they know more than
they think they know more.
Look, the bottom line is whatever they determine is the direction he ought to go. If he's a threat to slip, okay, if it's a threat for him to go someplace else and slip, then he probably should just go pro.
Wouldn't it make sense for even if they told him, "Hey, you're going to be a second or third round pick"? Wouldn't it still make sense to go because the pressure and going to a terrible team like, I don't know, Houston or Detroit? You're going to fail there.
Yeah, I don't think he would slip that far. And I also think that even if he did slip to the latter stages of the first round, you know, he might fall to a better team.
You know, exactly.
You could make a case that he could fall into a better situation. You know, I remember when Dak was a third rounder, and the moment I saw that, I was like, "Oh my God, he just hit the lottery."
Yeah.
And I had some friends of mine, because I was covering Dak in the SEC at that time. Dak is from basically Shreveport, my hometown. Houghton is just outside. It's a small rural town just outside the city limits of Shreveport, Bossier City, and I'd seen him in high school, knew the kid well, And I thought, man, when he gets his chance in Dallas, it's going to be perfect because Jones is going to spend the money to get the right people in there. He's always competing for championships. He's an owner that cares. I didn't know that what happened to Romo was going to happen and that he'd get the shot that he got early, but he fell really, although it was in the third round, he fell to a team that he could have greater success earlier with.
100%.
And that could happen to Rattler, you know, instead of going to a team similar to what Joe Burrow had to go to, right? Or Lamar or any of the guys recently that have gone into the league that have gone to, you know, better teams, you know, even Baker Mayfield. You think about that. He's been under the gun because he was expected to do so much in Cleveland. Well, I mean, Cleveland's not Dallas, you know, and doesn't have an ownership like Dallas. And so he might be well served to just go ahead and go pro, even if he drops to the latter stages of the first. Now, I don't know that he'd want to wait and go third round like, you know, Dak had to wait on his money. You know, he only recently got it. But in terms of just viability to win and be a well-developed player with a system that gives him a better chance to be successful, it might work out for him. Look what happened to Darnold. You know, Darnold went to the wrong team at the wrong time. The situation I know is balanced out some in Carolina, but, you know, they're also, you know, banged up a little bit. Sam's banged up. Imagine if he had been with Joe Brady right out of the gates as opposed to having to go to the Jets.
And Adam Gase. Oh.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Do you have a Heisman vote?
Yes. Oh, yeah. For 30 years, I've had one.
Are you allowed to talk about, you know, what? Who's your leader at this juncture?
They don't want us to tell us how we vote, but I can tell you who I'm considering, and I've never been more wide open.
Yeah,
than I am this year. Jordan Davis is going to get some consideration from me.
The Georgia defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's going to get some consideration.
Okay.
There's no telling. I mean, the only Heisman performance that I've seen was the one at Michigan State last week. That kid, the transfer from Wake. I mean, my gosh, what a performance that was. And probably most people out there didn't know who he was until the second half of the Michigan game. Now, I don't know if that's his one shot and maybe he levels off, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe he continues to play at a very high level. Corral was in a good position, the Ole Miss quarterback. But see, unlike running backs, quarterbacks, they win the Heisman more often, yes. But they have greater chances to lose the Heisman than running backs. So, you know, there's a plethora of people out there, Jason, that you could turn to right now. I think they may have to invite a half dozen or more people there.
Wow.
Because the vote is going to be so segmented.
Super split,
so regionally oriented. Now, look, Bryce Young is going to have big opportunities, no doubt about it. So, you know, you got to put the Alabama quarterback has always got to be in the mix. And, you know, if you beat Georgia, you know, and if you have to beat them again, you know, or whatever, if you win that game and you take care of Auburn, you know, those two games are going to be influential games for him.
Yeah.
He could go out and rest it away by simply playing big in those games, no doubt about it.
I think wide open is good for the Heisman,
Yeah, I think the Heisman race is a lot like the college football race this year. It's flat. Everything's flat. And, you know, after Georgia being number one, who else are you comfortable putting a numeral next to?
Yeah.
I'm not really that comfortable putting a numeral next to anybody. That's why I've got Cincinnati number two right now.
I like that. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Let's buzz through.
I got Georgia one. I got Cincinnati two, Michigan State three, and Alabama four. I think
Oklahoma outside looking in?
I got Oklahoma at six. I've got them behind Oregon.
Wow, not a believer in the Sooners. I like that.
Even though the Sooners are undefeated, I mean, that near loss to Kansas, in my mind, is worse than a loss.
That's bad, yeah. And Oregan does have maybe the best win of the season, right?
And over they got Ohio the State. Best road win, without a doubt. How can you put Ohio State ahead of Oregon right now? How?
Yeah. So where do you have Ohio State? Seven?
The only reason I've got Ohio State seven. Oregon is not They're a big name on the West Coast, Jason, but they're not pure playoff privilege.
Yeah.
Ohio
yeah.
State is the Alabama of the North, okay? Alabama is like the Cowboys, and and Ohio State is like the Patriots, okay?
Oh, gosh.
You got to see them. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Oh, man. It's a double hitter today. America's game of the week is New England or Dallas, okay?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what college football has become as it relates to the two biggest names, the two highest-rated teams.
Yeah.
And look, Columbus, Ohio, and Birmingham, Alabama are the two highest-rated college football cities in the country. So yeah. that's one of the reasons why it works that way.
Yeah, I 100% agree. But people don't talk enough about the ratings. I want to buzz through some coaching jobs, first of all. Tim, Jim Harbaugh, in trouble, lost to Sparty, going to lose to the Buckeyes again. I don't know if he loses a third game this year.
No, he's not.
No, he's safe. Jim Harbaugh's safe.
Taking the pay cut.
Okay.
I mean, Michigan.
They don't love him. I mean, Tim, you saw it. After that loss, it was like, we're up 30-14. Harbaugh stinks. Get him out of here. They were undefeated like an hour before that.
Well, until the Michiganders have the power of social media of a Clay Travis at Tennessee, he's safe. Remember when Shiano was up for the
That's
job?
That's right. Yeah.
Clay started, pounding the drum. We can't have Shiano coming here. And you know what? It worked. It absolutely worked. Social media controlled the Tennessee leadership. I don't think Michigan's social media whack jobs are going to tell their Board of Regents or their president and chancellor what to do.
Michigan's like a way better school than Tennessee. Like they claim education above all,
right.
Although they need football. But I don't think they're going to be bullied by social media idiots.
Exactly.
Like Tennessee's kind of soft.
And
they've
already given Jim his pay cut, and Jim took it, and he handled it well. And to be perfectly honest with you, his demeanor this year has been tremendous. I'm impressed with what I've seen. And look, I know a lot of people say that's another big game. He was placating to the second quarterback. He turned it over. He should have. All true. All those things are true. I mean, Jim made some mistakes. I thought offensively they could have just pounded the rock with a 16-point lead. Instead, they were putting it in the air, and they allowed some mistakes to happen, put the ball on the turf, and gave Michigan State life. But to me, it showed that he was really – not taking the pedal off the metal. I thought his intention was to stay aggressive, which I like. I think he's okay. And look, people will continue to throw up the records against his rivals, and it's I get that. But for the price they're getting him at right now, he's actually a pretty good deal.
Okay.
I don't know if he's anybody better right now.
I don't disagree. You're from Louisiana. Who is getting the LSU job in your perfect world? Who would you like? Mel Tucker?
I think the first call, and look, Scott Woodward was in high school at Catholic High in Baton Rouge when I was working in local TV there. He's a good guy.
Okay.
He's known for making great hires. He's married, by the way, to Mark Emmert's daughter.
Oh, really?
Mark Emmert, the president of Washington, hired him as athletic director. And Mark did a great job at LSU getting Saban. And you know, he was working at that time as an underling at LSU, and that's where he got his feet wet in administration. And when he went to Washington and hired Chris Peterson, that was a coup. Getting him out of Boise was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was an even bigger deal at Texas A&M when he got Jimbo. And remember, because he cut that deal with Jimbo as the athletic director, he knows that there is no buyout for Jimbo Fisher. Now, what I'm telling you, I don't believe he's going to get Jimbo, but I believe.
Really?
I don't believe he's going to get him, but I know he's going to call him. He's going to make Jimbo Fisher tell him no.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think. If you're Jimbo Fisher, LSU's a better job than A&M.
I think it is.
Yeah.
And I think it is because you don't have to deal with the constant daily Texas talk and recruiting Friday Night Live stuff. It never ceases. It never ceases in Texas. And now with Texas going into the SEC, it's only going to make it that much more competitive on a daily basis. And here's something else to consider. All of the And people are going to say, ah, Brando, he's an LSU homer. No, no, no. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with jobs, their geography, and what comes with the territory. If you're offering the LSU job out there, if you are the guy that gets to procure the next head coach for that institution, you can go to that coach and his agent. And that agent is Jimmy Sexton, somebody of that course, we've yeah. done a lot of business with for a long time.
Yeah.
You can call him up and say, hey, now look, I know Jimbo's got to say all the right things, and he already has. You know, we love it here. My family loves it here, love to fish here. Got a lot of friends at A&M, great environment, all those things. We've heard all that. But Jimbo knows, because he was part of it as the OC for Saban in 03. What other program in college football could say they have three national championships in the last 18 years with three different head coaches?
Yeah.
And two of those three coaches might be considered average coaches. Okay.
Yeah. Ed O is not going to be thrilled hearing that, but
no. But I mean,
yeah, yeah. You're right. I don't think anybody would. Yeah.
Look, I like Ed, and I like Les, but they're not in the same stratosphere with Saban or Dabo or Urban or name the big name coach with multiple national titles. It's pretty unique to be able to say, Jason, we've won three national championships with three different coaches over an 18-year period.
You want to win one, Jimbo. I mean, another one.
Jimbo, Jimbo's got one. How many has Texas A&M had? How many have they had there?
That's a good point. Is there any?
No.
Never won the Nat. Wow. That's
well, we've got to go back to the UPI and AP and all those days. Long, long time ago, if they ever had any. And, Gene Stallings and the Junction Boys, I don't think even got it. So it's hard. It's hard in Texas. And in Louisiana, we have a few more taxes you have to pay on the money that comes out. We've got property taxes and we got parish taxes here.
But, okay.
they can offer the same amount of money that he's making at A&M and probably a little bit more.
Yeah.
And Jimbo was beloved in Baton Rouge. And they wanted him. They wanted him so badly that they were ready to fire Les. And then when Sexton wouldn't bring him there because he didn't like the AD at the time, Joe Oliva, they didn't get him, and they wound up bringing Les back and then ultimately having to hire Orgeron when they really wanted Tom Herman, of all people. So this would be maybe the time for them to – that's the first call. First call is to Jimbo. Now, say that's a pipe dream and it doesn't happen. I think the next guy you turn to – and I know he's got a little dirt on him right now, but the next guy you turn to is James Franklin.
And the reason over Mel Tucker?
I think so. Remember this about Tucker. He's hot now, no doubt. But this would be his third job in 4 years if you pulled it.
That's a good point. Yep.
He was at Colorado for like a blink. Now he's at Michigan State, and then you bring him in. I don't know that you can possibly pull that off. Franklin, on the other hand, may be in the midst of wearing out his welcome in Happy Valley, and he's a buttoned-up promoter and chest-out leader and a CEO.
Is he a cultural fit down there, you think?
I think he really is. I think he really is. I think there is a sincere belief, and this is one of the reasons why you're hearing Tucker's name so much. You're hearing Tucker's name a lot because I think there's a sincere belief that it may be time for an African-American coach of the football program at LSU, which I don't disagree with. And the new president at LSU, brand new, is an African-American. Okay. And I believe there's the potential of that happening. But for me, the guy that fits better is the guy that's been in the SEC, has succeeded in the SEC. And it's not lost on anybody that James Franklin went into Vanderbilt and won 9 games in a season.
That's a good point.
I mean, if you can recruit to Nashville, okay, and win 9 games, Jason, what the hell do you think the guy could do in Baton Rouge? Okay. LSU recruits itself in a lot of ways. It always has personnel. But James Franklin, with that kind of personnel, can do tremendous things. So that to me, that's the second call. And Dave Aranda, the former defensive coordinator for Orgeron when they won it all in 19, now at Baylor, that's the next call. That's the guy you call after James Franklin. Those are my
interesting. Oh, that's not a bad. I had not even considered him. Now I don't know if any of those guys would be in the mix. We could wrap up with the USC job. I don't think any of them, other than Franklin, really make sense.
Well, Franklin would make sense for the very same reasons I mentioned Baton Rouge and his bravado. You know, his ability to, he's got charisma. He's great with the media. That really matters out there. You know that, and it's a little swagger. You know, bring back some of the swagger that USC had when Pete was there. And, you know, that staff that he had. And that's the other thing. Be able to put together a really great staff. Mm-hmm. That's what you can do at a place like LSU. It's something you can also do at USC. And there are a lot of contacts in the business that a guy like James has for USC. I couldn't get over the rant, just off the charts rant that Stephen A. Smith had about Tomlin. Maybe you can help me out on that, that it was somehow racist to imply that Mike Tomlin needed to look at the USC job and possibly it was time for him to leave the NFL. Just implying that was a bad thing. I don't get that. And I like Stephen A., don't get me wrong, but I just didn't understand that.
Thankfully, I missed that one, Tim.
I think USC is a great job for a pro coach. A great job for a guy like Tomlin. I mean, look what Pete did. He basically was expunged, right? I mean, when he left the NFL, he had to recreate himself through USC, and he did. I think energy and enthusiasm and a fresh approach. You know, the only question with him would be, well, does he want to recruit? Does he know how to recruit?
Yeah.
And I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that. Only Mike Tomlin knows the answer to that. But I think a pro head coach coming to SC, somebody that wants to college football is a great game. And, so much of college football has come into the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them don't want to admit it, but that's what's happening. The NFL is looking more and more like the college game every time I look at it.
Definitely.
And that's that happening the way it has, I think would tell some NFL guys, you know, maybe I ought to think about, because I don't have to work as hard. I get a little more time off, and I'm going to make how much money at USC?
I guess we could wrap up with UCLA. And that, listen, that's a tough one. Chip Kelly came from the NFL. They want to run him out of town. You know, the boosters at UCLA, very influential. Is that even a great job, Tim? UCLA?
No, it's really not.
It's a great school. We know that. But is it a good job, is a question.
Chip didn't get all of the things that he thought he was going to get, you know, the tools to work with in the beginning. Yeah. He didn't. And I think the facilities issue has been problematic at UCLA for a while. And he thought he was going to get some things that, you know, my moles have told me he did not get. Yeesh. Now, he did. I think the Dorian Thompson-Robinson thing should have and could have gone a lot better, and it didn't. Mm-hmm. And he put a lot into that kid, and it just didn't work out. But at the same time, when you're running that kind of offense, you can't expect your defense to be, you know, just a juggernaut. You can't, because you're coaching possession football, and more possessions means your defense has to go out there a hell of a lot more and play more plays.
Yeah.
And so I get why there are a lot of disgruntled folks out there. But at least with UCLA, Chip created a culture offensively. The whole Pac-12 is so screwed up right now, Jason. I mean,
for a couple years now.
It really is. And if I were UCLA, I would, especially their fan base, and I would say this, until you begin to support your program at the Rose Bowl a little bit better, I don't know that you've got a right to be that pissed off. Yeah. You know? I don't think you've got a right to be that pissed off. Any one of those teams, any one of those coaches at Pac-12 South schools, you know, they got a great chance to be better than average and build a program because it's so down. I mean, if Herm had done a better job at Arizona State, look where they would be right now. And I really thought that, you know, everybody had their eyes crossed when he got hired, thinking that, well, that doesn't sound like a real fit.
Pretty random.
It was a pretty random hire. But you know what? He was on his way with the personnel. Now, he obviously, if the reports that are alleged are true, he clearly made some mistakes that even the NCAA can't screw up. They're going to be in trouble. But ultimately, that division of the Pac-12, the South, with jobs like, you know, UCLA, SC, and Arizona State, those are good jobs.
Yeah.
And where they go and who they get, those are, you can turn that thing around really quickly, is my point.
Yeah, I was just looking at the UCLA records this century.
Yeah.
They have three finishes in the top 20.
Yeah.
That's it. Three.
Yeah.
That's I didn't realize it was that ghastly. Oh my gosh.
Makes you appreciate Terry Donahue, the late Terry Donahue, all the more.
How about Bob Toledo had two top 10 finishes? I don't even know who the quarterback was in the 90s, but you're right. Terry Donahue was awesome for them in the 80s.
He had a couple of off years in there, you know, from time to time, but
it happens.
But I mean, you could almost count on UCLA to make two out of every five Rose Bowls for a period of about 20 years.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, he's Tim Brando. You got Baylor this weekend, Tim?
Yeah, Baylor at TCU this weekend, and we're on that six-day hold to find out where we're going to be for Fox.
Yeah, all right. Well, Saturday, if I don't talk to you, enjoy the games. Have a great holiday. I know the rush from now through the New Year's wild. Thanksgiving, Christmas. Be safe. Yeah. Enjoy the family.
You too, Jason. I love seeing you in social media with those kids of yours. Keep it up and safe.
Thank you. All right, Tim. Thanks a lot.
You bet.